dozens of Massachusetts faith leaders are partnering with leading climate scientists on a joint call to action, calling continued inaction on climate change, quote, both scientifically irrational and morally indefensible. At a press conference last week, the Reverend Mariama White Hammond of Bethel AME Church spoke of the impacts of climate change on Massachusetts' most vulnerable communities.
And the reality is that those of us in power have a moral responsibility to our most vulnerable citizens. And so this afternoon, we're using our power as religious and scientific leaders to ask other leaders in politics and business and all other fields to join us in action. The time to address this crisis is now.
So what does this joint announcement say about this particular moment in climate politics in our country? Joining me now is Phil Duffy. He's president of Woods Hole Research Center and a key signatory of the joint call for action. Phil, always good to talk with you.
Well, thanks for having me.
We will talk about the joint appeal, but first I actually want to rewind about a week and a half, kind of set the scene with what is happening politically with regard to climate change. You were in D.C. for a hearing of the House Committee on Science, Space and Technology, ostensibly about using technology to address climate change. And watching that testimony and the question and answer part in particular, I mean, it definitely seems more like political theater than any true imparting of information.
It is. And yeah, and you said the hearing was ostensibly about the role of technology in addressing climate change. And ostensibly is the right word. I mean, the Republican members have traditionally used these hearings to try to cast doubt on the reality of climate change, to try to cast doubt on our understanding about the human causation of climate change, and also to suggest without foundation that would be, quote, too expensive, unquote, to take any action.
There were a number of moments where there was information thrown out by members of Congress that was scientifically false. But one in particular grabbed a lot of attention, and this was an exchange with Representative Mo Brooks of Alabama. Let's hear a little bit of what he was trying to say might be causing sea level rise in particular.
Every single year that we're on Earth, you have huge tons of silt deposited by the Mississippi River, by the Amazon River, by the Nile, by every major river system, and for that matter, creek, all the way down to the smallest systems. And every time you have that soil or rock, whatever it is that is deposited into the seas, that forces the sea levels to rise.
That's not what's causing sea level rise, and we know that. But this particular exchange between you and Representative Brooks got picked up by the Washington Post, by Snopes. I mean, all over the place in ways that these hearings don't usually make the media. What do you think drove that?
Well, it's a fairly absurd suggestion. I mean, I think the truth is that erosion does, you know, on geologic timescales, probably have some impact on sea level rise. But as I said in the hearing, on human timescales, it's utterly negligible. It's minuscule. As you said, these hearings are political theater. The members use them to try to gain positive publicity. And my hope is that the negative publicity that came out of this will motivate the members to have a more serious conversation in the future.
Well, one of the things that was interesting was listening to the three witnesses, yourself and two others, the other two called by the Republican majority. And in the past, those witnesses, you might expect to hear them actually espousing views that deny the human role in climate change or that climate change is even happening. And we didn't hear that this time. I mean, were you surprised that there actually seemed to be some common ground?
Well, I have to say I was. I mean, I, of course, in the days leading up to the hearing, I did some reading and I you know, read what my fellow witnesses have been saying about climate change. And I was pleasantly surprised. I will say I don't agree with them about everything, far from it. But just as you said, the starting point of accepting climate change, accepting the human causation of climate change, and actually in subsequent discussions we agree also the three witnesses that it's important to take action now. I mean, that's actually huge.
It's
that is the starting point for the constructive conversation that I wish that hearing could have been.
I'm talking with Phil Duffy. He's the president of Woods Hole Research Center. Coming on the heels of that testimony in D.C., then Woods Hole Research Center, a number of climate scientists from around Massachusetts and about two dozen faith leaders from Massachusetts made this announcement of a joint call for climate action. It's not the first time that faith leaders have called for climate action, for that matter. I mean, Pope Francis has made this kind of a signature issue. But how did this particular partnership come together?
Well, first of all, I'll just say that we're starting with this joint call for action. But what's really, I think, significant is that we intend to have an ongoing cooperative effort to try to implement some good climate policies in Massachusetts, and also due to some communication around the issue. But to answer your question, how it came about, I mean, it actually is entirely due to my wife, Lauren, who's been telling me for years, you should work with the religious leaders. You should work with the religious leaders. And of course, I saw the wisdom of that, but I didn't have the opportunity to do that until recently, and she actually also provided the opportunity meeting a guy named Mark Silk, who's a professor at Trinity College. He runs something called the Center for the Study of Religion and Public Life. So he's not a religious leader himself, but he's involved in that community. And anyway, my wife sat next to him on an airplane, got to talking to him, said, you should work with my husband.
Serendipity in action.
Yeah, you said, and then so Mark came and visited Woods Hole Research Center. He stayed the night at the house, and Mark and I stayed up late talking, and we came up with this idea of why don't we try to form this coalition of faith leaders and climate scientists. And, you know, what made it happen was because Mark is involved in the religious community, he had a connection to Cardinal O'Malley, the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Boston. And the idea was floated to O'Malley, and he responded positively, and that's how we got where we are today.
You know, Woods Hole Research Center and the Boston Archdiocese are key partners in this, but there are about two dozen or so faith leaders and also about two dozen or so climate scientists. Was it easy to gather those people? Were people enthusiastic on both sides of this equation to jump into a partnership like this?
Yes, it's been, and I should say the joint appeal, at last I heard, has over 600 signatories. It's somewhat to my surprise, it's been a little bit harder to get the scientists involved than the religious leaders, and I don't know if that's because, you know, scientists have just insane schedules, or if they had some reluctance to work with faith leaders. But certainly the faith communities from all different stripes have really jumped on board with this idea.
What kinds of commitments are being made on both sides of this partnership? You said kind of an ongoing conversation. What does that actually look like?
Well, it's actually yet to be determined. I mean, we've had one essentially a 24-hour retreat back in February at the Archdiocese Pastoral Center in Braintree, and we agreed in principle to form a partnership and make an ongoing effort. What exactly that looks like, what exactly we will do is still to be determined. We're actually having another day-long retreat where we will delve into some of those more substantive questions. But there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of momentum.
Is your sense that the agreement, you know, we were just talking about kind of the agreement between those who are testifying in Congress, that you agree with the basic facts that climate change is happening, it's human caused, and we should do something about it. Does the agreement between scientists and faith leaders go farther than that? Do you have a sense that there might be agreement on what that path forward, what that action should look like?
It's yet to be explored. And I'm optimistic that we can find common ground. But, you know, that's where it gets hard. You know, it's easy to identify general points of agreement. And then when it gets to specific ideas, specific policies, it does tend to get harder. But again, I'm optimistic that, you know, there's so much interest and so much need to do this that I feel good about our chances for success.
Does this feel to you like a formalization, just kind of solidifying the fact that we all kind of knew that, you know, faith leaders wanted to see climate action and mm-hmm. and climate scientists want to see climate action, and this is just making that more formal? Or does this feel like a major shift, a major step for you in potentially building coalitions that could lead to some sort of
action? Well, I think it's significant for these two communities, these particular two communities, to work together for a couple of reasons. And one is just the obvious one, that the faith communities and the scientific community really look at things very differently, and we have different perspectives. You might say we have different worldviews. There's a lot we don't agree on. And just the fact that we've decided to join hands and work together on this issue says a lot about the importance that we attach to it. You know, the other thing that I really value about the partnership, well, there's a couple of other things, but one is just the ability to reach audiences that I as a scientist cannot reach. And as we all know, you know, really reaching people, having an impact on the way they're thinking, it's as much about the messenger, who you are, as about the message, what you're saying. And so working with faith leaders is a great opportunity, I think, to reach people that as a, you know, the scientific community can't reach directly. You know, the other thing I would say that's really significant is that, you know, there just is a moral dimension to the problem of climate change. And it's interesting how, you know, the science and the moral dimensions overlap. And one example of that is this idea of we may be very close to committing future generations to dealing with some really horrible outcomes. And one example is we may be close to the point where it becomes inevitable and unstoppable that the Greenland ice sheet will melt entirely. And then, you know, so the point is that decisions that we make today, including by making no decisions, so the decisions we make today may impose enormous costs on future generations, and those future generations have no voice in making those decisions. And that's really a moral issue. And I think it's important to see it that way and to discuss it that way.
Faith communities also potentially cross political boundaries. And given how partisan climate has become, do you think there's a possibility that this kind of partnership with faith communities could help build political bridges as well?
Well, I certainly hope so. And that, again, that's part of the motivation. And we, you know, Woods Hole Research Center has made other efforts along the lines to work with folks in different communities. I mean, we've worked with a fellow, for example, named Bob Inglis, a wonderful guy, former, very, very conservative, former Republican congressman from South Carolina, former climate change denier. And he, you know, a couple of things happened, but he took a trip to Antarctica and kind of saw the light about climate change. And he's been very vocal on the issue. And you know, again, it's a case where he can reach people that I can't that reach. And I think it's very, very powerful, because in the end, if we are going to solve this problem, we'll have to have cooperation from all different groups of folks with different backgrounds and different viewpoints.
That's Phil Duffy. He's president of Woods Hole Research Center. Phil, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Up next, what this hurricane season has in store for us. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.